welcome to the Operation Move podcast. My name is Zoe and I'm here with Kate.
Hello, only a few weeks left.
I'm
nearly done. It's nearly over.
Yeah, I am all about, I've gone into full Christmas preparation mode. So I, article that I shared on the Facebook page about the Christmas gift guide came from Kelly Exeter, who I also read this other Christmas related thing from, which she was talking about how all good Christmas preparation happens in November, and I'm very on board with that. So
yeah, nice.
I'm looking at I saw down in Spotlight, which because of the amount of wool I buy for crocheting is like my second home, and I was down there and I saw that they had some just some plain glass baubles, and I thought bit of that, bit of some glitter glue, and the kids would have an absolute ball. So I'll get on that later in the week.
Oh, awesome. We actually, it's interesting you say that. We just pulled out the decorations last night because we traditionally do it the first weekend of December, and then last year we moved it forward a weekend because I only have the kids with me every other weekend now. And this year they're actually having Christmas Day with their dad for the first time. So I'm like, oh, bugger it. Do you know what? Let's just do it now. Let's just get it out there and make the most of it because, you know, these days are going to fly by and I want to enjoy them.
I'm going to look at something like Christmas tree like, but not actually a Christmas tree this year, because our cat destroyed the Christmas tree last year. Like, he was a kitten, but he's, and I thought he was going to be a big cat, but he's just not. And so he's still small enough that he could potentially still climb the Christmas tree, and there'd just be no stopping him. I ended up having to put the Christmas tree outside last year, and Josh was like, that's so depressing, having it outside. So I'm going to look in, I don't know, friend of mine does some trees made out of driftwood, like something like that would work, or nice. Even something that is, you know, sort of like one of those sort of like, you know, like wire or metallic type Christmas trees that I guess they're more like an elaborate cone than a tree. But, you know, it doesn't really matter as long as it's something that I can still put decorations on, but the cat can't climb. So I'm going to have to go on a mission and find something that works.
Yeah, the tree is the one thing we haven't done yet because it's in a spot where usually I can reach it and currently I cannot. So I need to wait for someone taller to be at my house and available to get it down for us. But we've just got one of those fake trees, which will be fine for this year. And I was saying to the kids it'll be interesting next year because we'll have a potential toddler on our hands, or, you know, at least a crawler most likely. So, and I don't know, I've obviously just forgotten what baby proofing is somewhere. Few years, because my friend came over the other day with her one-year-old and he just, everything was dangerous all of a sudden, and I'm like, wow, when did we get past that phase where we can just have stuff, and where am I going to put all that stuff? Because I'm gonna have to move away again.
I put fitted sheets over our bookcases when the kids were little, just
that's
to,
clever,
just to stop them, like, just like constantly pulling out like books and stuff. And I was also concerned about them sort of getting in there and potentially, you know, tipping something over. Like, one of them tipped a chest of drawers over on themselves when they were a toddler. I mean they were an absolute menace. and it's the kind of thing that I don't think about now, you know, like, it's just, you get used to the way things are. But I remember when they were little, they just got into absolutely everything. And I mean, I didn't really do much baby proofing. Like, I had a baby gate in the kitchen, I think, which was an unmitigated disaster, because every time I was in there, if I closed the gate, they would just be beside themselves. and I got pretty good at, you know, sort of climbing the gate anyway. So I sort of gave up on that one. Probably the thing that worked the best for me was just having one of those. It was like a porta cot, but you could also use it as a playpen. So in a pinch, could chuck a couple of toys in there and put them in there for a little bit, and then back in the days when they couldn't move, that was fun.
Yeah, I remember I used to do that while I was sewing with my first one, and we just called it baby jail. Pop him in the baby jail for a few minutes, and I had one child who was happy with that, and one child who would not be put down for years and years. So, yeah, you have to pick your battles, I think, sometimes. But with the
Yeah.
decorating thing, we traditionally have lunch at my parents' house, which is the house that I grew up in, and because my parents have a whole lot of grandchildren, but they don't particularly want to do Christmas trees, we have the Christmas piano. My mum just puts things on the top, and there'll be some, tinsel and stuff. And my bigger kids now will help her decorate that room. And there might be a tiny tree on the mantelpiece, but yeah, no big trees for them anymore. And it's the one thing they absolutely will not do under any circumstances, no matter who wants them to.
Yeah, our main tradition is probably on Christmas Day is breakfast. So my mum and my aunt will come over for that, and we do sort of like a combined vegetarian slash not vegetarian breakfast. So there'll be traditional sort of like bacon and egg and sausage breakfast for people who eat meat, and I always do lots of pancakes and stuff for people who are not of the meat eating variety, and sort of do that, and maybe a few breakfast cocktails, you never know.
Oh, cocktails, I remember them. One
Soon,
day soon.
although you can, I think that when I was pregnant, I'd always think, oh yeah, like 9 months, and then you just completely forget about all of the breastfeed, and you're like, yeah, kind of longer than 9 months in the whole non-drinking scenario.
Well, it's funny. I've had the odd glass of wine, like the night I got engaged, I had a glass of wine because it was also my 40th birthday, and I had one for Rob's 40th birthday, and I have, no dramas about that whatsoever. But yeah, it's not just pregnancy, it's the whole breastfeeding thing as well. And it's funny because I don't really drink much anymore. I only miss it because I can't, I
Yeah.
guess. Yeah, it's that thing, you always want what you haven't got, I guess.
Yeah, and you definitely sort of I think there are just so many things that you're doing with pregnancy that that you want to do but are also kind of not your choice. So, it's just one of those other things to add on to the pile of bodily discomforts and, everything else. Whereas, like I think that I probably struggled more with not drinking than when I was pregnant than when I went for a year and just decided not to drink because I didn't want to. It's just one
Yeah.
of those things.
It's funny, isn't it? Because I did the same thing. It didn't bother me when I was doing it by choice. And it doesn't actually really bother me now, but there are times when I think, oh, especially because we actually had 2 hot days, which is radical for Melbourne at the moment this year. And, I thought, oh, it'd be nice to have a cider. And we lit up the barbecue for the first time. But, oh, well, small price. I'm drinking mineral water in wine glasses and pretending to be posh. That's fine.
That's what I used to do. I used to just make, because a lot of times it's not really anything to do with the alcohol. It's just sort of like a, celebratory thing, which is often just a fancy drink. Like it's not necessarily an alcoholic drink. So I found by doing like mocktail mojitos or something, I enjoyed that just as much.
Yeah, that sounds like a thing I'm going to investigate and get right into very soon.
Yeah, there's that way because a lot of it is just, kind of like particularly at around times of celebration is feeling like you might be missing out. And if you've got, you can make some really, like whether you make like sort of pina colada type things or mojitos, heaps of stuff that you can make. And it was the kind of thing that I did probably in the first couple of months when I stopped drinking, and then after a while, I guess you get less attached to it, and so I did it less. But if I wasn't drinking around Christmas time, I would definitely be on that.
Yep, I'm going to start searching out recipes as soon as we're finished on this Skype.
Great time for lots of yummy summer drinks now that it's warming up and everything, although maybe Melbourne seems to be a bit like yo-yo territory at the moment, from what I hear.
Oh, I have no idea what's going on. None of us slept for the last 2 nights because it's been a zillion degrees. Woke up this morning and I've just been for a walk in the rain and it's, you know, freezing, maybe 11 degrees. It's just bizarre.
So we were going to talk today about how to start after a break, whether, and sometimes that break might be something like a pregnancy. Sometimes that break might be because you've just lost interest in it for a while, or you've lost motivation, or you might have had, you know, like a really bad bout of illness, like with glandular fever or something like that, or it might have been an injury that had you sidelined for a bit. There can be lots and lots of reasons why you might have a break, but I thought that we'd just talk a little bit about, you know, how to get back into it.
Yep, and goodness knows I know all about having a break at the moment, so I feel very qualified to speak on this one.
Yeah, I mean, probably I've had, probably the main breaks that I have had is there was, had a couple of times with injury where I've needed to do some rehab, and then I think a couple of years ago I just had a period where I was overwhelmed and I didn't end up doing anything for like 2 or 3 weeks, something like that. So it kind of does depend on how long of a break you're talking about, because you don't really lose that much fitness if you have, you know, sort of 3 weeks off. That's not going to derail you too much. It's probably more in your head than anything else at that point. But when you have a longer break, then there's a couple of things that, like, there's sort of like a detraining that happens, so you lose fitness, but you always kind of maintain this kind of like baseline level of fitness. So it's why if you have run before and then you don't run for like a year, you can just go out there and you're ability to still do that is going to be a lot higher than somebody who has never run before.
I'm really looking forward to, and kind of scared about putting that to the test, you know, in the near future, because I have it in my head in some ways. I feel like even though I haven't run in months that I could just go and run a 5K if I wanted it. And look, mind over matter, I probably could, but it would not necessarily be a wise decision for my physical health, especially not at the moment, but even in, you know, 3 months time or whatnot. You know, I think all of us can probably do anything if we think about it hard enough, but you need to think about the longer term implications for your physical health too. But yeah, like you were saying, longer breaks too, like I think we've probably both heard of people who have trained for, say, a marathon or their first half marathon and put all this time and effort into this specific event, and then the event happens and it's like they just go, well, I'm done now. I mean, a lot of people obviously go on and do multiple different runs and are completely sucked in. But I think for a lot of people, particularly when it is a first of a big event, they kind of get to that event and they don't know what to do. They do fall off the rails. And you do hear people having, you know, a year or two where they don't run at all because they've achieved that goal and in the time afterwards haven't kind of reset their thinking around what they want to achieve next. And as a result, they don't achieve anything.
Yeah, and it can also, it can sneak up on you, like people who are long-term runners all kind of know of this concept of, you know, the come down after an event where, you know, you feel kind of demotivated and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. And usually now, like you sort of, like if I have an event, then usually I have the next one planned as well, because it kind of like helps to sort of offset that. But there is this kind of, there's this build up and then there's this event and then you kind of finish it. It's like anything, like, and then afterwards you kind of, and usually, like, or not usually, but often you will sort of go away for an event, or you'll be sort of like seeing friends at an event, and then you kind of like go back to your real life and you're like, oh, okay, this is where we are. And so I think that if you know that, then it's a lot easier to cope with that, because that can turn into something a lot bigger than what it really is. And I think that there is this sort of risk around, like, the way some goals are structured is, like, I want to run a marathon, for example. Once you do it, you've achieved it, so what's the point? And so I think that there's a big part of looking at really loving the process of training, and then having the event be a celebration of that, but the process is what you will come back to, not the event. The event is one day out of what, like 4, 3 or 4 months. It's a really small part of it.
And I think something we should probably address here while we're talking about these things is that there might be times, even if you love the process in most of your life, there will be times where maybe you're not going to love it and you might not even know why, where it's just not feeling good, where you are unmotivated, where you're not enjoying it. And it happens to the best of us. And it's okay to push yourself through it. And it's also okay not to push yourself through it and to take a break and reassess and come back to it, because that love will still be out there, but sometimes it's just not there.
Yeah, and I think that it can ha like sometimes there is absolutely no reason for it. Like there's just it's completely random, and it can take you by surprise. Other times there might be a reason for it. It might be that you're training too hard. It might be that you are tired. It might be that you have an idea in your head of, I want to be a half marathon runner, but you don't actually enjoy long runs. And
Which is a problem.
yeah, it could be a problem. And so, it might be like going, oh, I kind of like the idea of this big kind of like epic run, but actually in my day-to-day, what I actually enjoy is going out for just short runs. And you can choose what that means. Either that means that you adjust your expectations around the event you're going to go into and go into for more sort of 5 to 10K or whatever it is, or you just do the training that you like to do and have confidence in your body that when it comes to the event, if you want to run for 2 hours, you can.
Yeah.
Like it's, I mean,
And sometimes it.
I wouldn't recommend that as, as a first time half marathon runner, just like only ever running, an hour and then expecting of your body to be able to run 2.5 hours on the day. You could definitely do it, but it would probably hurt. But once you kind of, once you have developed your fitness to a certain point, you do kind of have a baseline where you could go off and run a longer distance without too many dramas. But just be aware that there might be a difference between the goal race that you're attracted to and the training that you actually like. And putting yourself through training that you don't like is just going to make you hate running.
And even though you might achieve that goal race, at the end of it, that sense of satisfaction is not going to be anything the same as it would be had you enjoyed the journey of getting there.
Yeah, and you can get into it can just end up feeling like you're punishing your body rather than celebrating it. If you're kind of like pushing yourself to do runs that you don't really enjoy and all of this sort of stuff, and then it can kind of, on the day, it can sort of feel the same, and that you kind of like it's sort of punishing or it's brutal, and people can romanticize that, like there's some kind of grand victory in, like pushing your body to the point of, say, like vomiting or something like that. And I do see people kind of glorify that, like I pushed myself so hard that I vomited. No one should ever vomit. Like I feel like this isn't something that I should need to point out.
I blame the Biggest Loser for that, though, to be honest, because that's something that, years ago in those first seasons, and I don't watch it anymore, so I've got no idea if they still do it. But I remember, they would really, that's what they would show. Like it was an achievement to work so hard that you throw up. And it's not an achievement.
No, I mean that should not be the kind of relationship that you create between yourself and your training and, how you work with your body to achieve things. And it's not, and I think that people can like That's how hard I push. But like I'm big on, on doing hard workouts. Never vomited ever. In a run, occasionally, like one time when I was going for like a 5 kilometer PB, I got to sort of like close to the edge of that, and I was like, oh, so that's how it happens. Because before that, I had no concept of how somebody would run that hard that they could potentially vomit. And but so I think that if you kind of go through that process with that attitude, then it can then kind of like go into the event, and it can be this kind of like I punish my body the whole way through that. And then you can kind of convince yourself that, oh, it's just so hard and I'm never doing it again and that kind of thing, because you've just created this whole mindset around the event and around the training that is really unnecessary, like where it should be. Like you can, go out for a PB and you can push pretty hard in an event, and it's a great time to do that because you've got all of those water stations there, you've got, like roads blocked off, you've got the atmosphere of the crowd, and you've got other people to run with, so that's a great way to do that. Or you can just go out and, really enjoy it, but it should still feel relatively comfortable, and and that you are controlling your level of comfort or discomfort. But pain shouldn't be something that you expect or allow in training or in racing. Discomfort, sure, like for a hard run, but pain, no. Like pain isn't a normal part of, like when you are sort of like lying in bed, you shouldn't be in pain. Admittedly, I'm talking to someone who's heavily pregnant, is probably in pain most of the time.
All the time.
But all things being equal, and if you aren't growing a human, then at rest you shouldn't be in pain. On a run, you shouldn't be in pain. And if you are, it is your body throwing up some red flags that there's something that you need to fix. And so, yeah, like I think that there's a lot to consider if you have had a break, to really look into why you had the break. Were you overtraining? Was the training something that you enjoy doing? What would you need to change so that you do enjoy it and it is something that you want to be part of your life? If you were injured, what led to the injury, and really take an in-depth look at the injury. Mine is usually is my injuries were basically, it was not so much overuse as it was doubling up on workouts and running with fatigue, and my core collapsed. So I'm a lot more careful about like quality over quantity and recovering properly now than possibly what I'd been in the past. But if I just sort of thought, oh yeah, like it's just a random thing, like people tear muscles sometimes, then I could have just continued and compounded that, and it made it a lot worse for myself over time. And then that could have then led me to have like a this attitude of, oh, like I want to do all of this stuff, but my body's holding me back, and like my body is a mess. And instead of taking responsibility and actually looking at the amazing stuff that my body does, even when I push it a bit too far, and learning from that and maintaining that really positive mindset in terms of all of the awesome things that my body does.
I think thinking about as well the fact that what you love can change. And I think sometimes when people have breaks for no obvious physical reason, it can be around them making sense of what they're enjoying and how their enjoyment of moving has shifted. And particularly for those of us who, maybe learnt to run in our 30s, we weren't active teenagers or kids. It's such a learning curve the whole way along. And so, like, so for me, I learnt to run. Loved it. I'm sure I will love it again when I'm able to again. But there have been times when I haven't loved it, and it's confusing because I know intellectually that I love it and that I want to love it, but I'm not enjoying it at the time. And I think at times like that, it's a really good idea to maybe investigate what else you can be doing and how else you can be enjoying moving your body instead of kind of forcing yourself to keep doing something that's not giving you joy at the time. Because goodness knows, even look at running as a sport itself, maybe you're not liking doing long runs, but maybe you'd like to spend some time consolidating a 5K and doing some speed work, which is a completely different kind of training to endurance training. Or maybe it's a good time to go and check out some classes at the gym, or maybe you might want to try CrossFit or give other things a go. Like, you don't have to isolate yourself to one thing. And if you are going through a period of not loving something, it doesn't mean you're not going to love it later on. It's okay to let it go for a while and come back to it as well.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that having other things that you do in terms of moving is a great kind of like protective factor for longevity in a lot of things. So, you know, there are times when I've done a lot less CrossFit and a lot more running, and there are times when I'm doing more CrossFit than running, or I'm prioritizing weights over running. So there are things that I do first rather than second, and there are things like if I'm sort of having a busy week, I kind of know where my priorities are. And you know, it just sort of allows you, because I think for a lot of people from a mental health perspective, they might be in a stage of, oh, I'm really not loving running at the moment and it's not doing anything for me, but I need to find a way to either move or get outside or whatever it is. And having those other things that you do can kind of create this sort of like holding pattern, or while you kind of settle into how you're feeling about it, what you want to do. It's really natural to have these kind of lulls in your relationship with running, and it's really natural to kind of fall out of love with running and, you know, and back again and all that kind of stuff. But if you don't allow yourself the space to have distance from it at times, then, you know, you can get into this situation where it's just really, really stressful, you know, where it kind of like feels just like, you know, you're going through quicksand. Or if it's like, I've had periods in the past where, you know, like I've been doing a lot of hard workouts with, you know, interval training with running, and you can get to the point where you just really dread it, you know, and there's all of this pressure on kind of like maybe achieving a certain pace, and then you can feel really demotivated if you don't quite get there on the particular day. And, you know, all of that kind of stuff can just combine to make it just all too hard and not what you're into doing. And sometimes it's too, it's just like I've been sick and I'm still thinking gross at the moment, but I think I'm coming out the other side. And it's also about just sort of allowing, you know, even though I've done a few runs this week, I know that I'm not doing anything that's not easy running this week, and I know I'm not doing any weights this week, because, you know, it would just be too much at this stage for, you know, like sort of coming back into it after holiday and also after being sick and everything like that. And I think that if you are more flexible with those kind of things that will pop up in your normal training, then it's easier to then also take those breaks when you need it, because you know there have been periods of time when you haven't done anything or you've done less and you've gotten back into it. And I think sometimes when you get into running after, like we did, after not having been active at all through, you know, like as a teenager or in my 20s, there can be like this kind of fear, like if you don't do something for 2 weeks, you're going to go back to never doing anything ever. But it's just not true, you know, like, and I think that one of the more interesting things I read about people who are returning to training is that, you know, there's that traditional rule in distance where you increase by like about 10% a week, which is a really, really slow increase, particularly if you're starting back for the first time. But basically what it says is you are very minimal, like if you're like my sort of standard mileage could be anywhere in between sort of like at the moment it's probably about 20 kilometers a week, but you know, anything in between, sort of like 20 to 50, is pretty normal for me. And so when I'm distance building, I can pretty easily get up to that level and pretty quickly without any risk of injury. But once I start going above that, that's when I need to be a bit more careful about building distance. And most people with their long-term fitness have a kind of baseline like that they're pretty comfortable with. And so if I hadn't been doing anything for a couple of months, I could pretty quickly build up to doing, some half-hour runs and some one-hour runs and, and all of that sort of stuff. But it is just a kind of intuitive process to see how your body is coping with that, and then kind of making adjustments as you go, and being really open to, like walking breaks and walking before you feel the need to walk, so you're kind of managing those fatigue levels when you're going back into it.
I think the thing with coming back to fitness after a break, whether it's a long or a short one, is just to be paying really super close attention to what your body's telling you as you go, which is, I mean, we say that to everyone all the time, but maybe it's a really good time to refamiliarize yourself with what kind of discomfort levels are telling you that you've worked hard and make you feel great, and what is maybe a pain reaction that's telling you that you need to adjust something or maybe slow down, and respect the fact that, yeah, your body has had a break and it needs to readjust back into this world of activity again.
Yeah, and particularly, with something like pregnancy, where that has been a huge amount of effort that your body has thrown into growing another human, and also all of the muscular changes, particularly, in terms of pelvic floor and core and abdomen, and like certainly after I had Riley, because that was a C-section. That's a huge surgery to recover from. So I had been, sort of doing a lot of walking before she was born. But even like for the first sort of like 5 weeks or so, even getting out of bed was a bit of a challenge. Like, because I couldn't just like sit right up. I kind of had to roll out. And so when you're looking at that kind of surgery to recover from, or even if you haven't needed to have a C-section and you've had a vaginal delivery, it's still a huge amount of work that your body is doing in terms of giving birth, and then all of the uterus contracting and returning to size, and all of those muscles and everything like that. Like, you want to be really gentle in that stage of things while you're allowing your body to sort of like get back to, well, it never really goes back to where it was, but a
No.
semblance of where it was, and you can kind of, I think that it's a great time to be really looking at sort of engaging the core, and like some practice stuff that you can do at home when you're not running, because it's hard to do things when you are running, because that takes, particularly when you're getting back into it, that takes enough concentration without thinking about your core being active and, like everything being in alignment and everything. So it's a great thing to do at home when you're not running, so it can become kind of like more second nature when you are running.
So maybe we could come up with some ideas for people who are wanting to return to moving more after a decent length break, whether it be because of pregnancy or illness or loss or anything else. So a break that's long enough where obviously your previous level of fitness will have been impacted. Where are some great places for people to start moving again safely?
I mean, I think that something, particularly this time of year, I think that swimming is a great option, because you are it's low or no impact, and obviously it's also something that you can do with kids, so it's quite flexible in that way. And someone who doesn't want to go for a swim, so I think that swimming can be a great one to do. I'm a big fan of walking, getting back into things. I think that walking is highly, highly underrated, and I think that when you're building up fitness again that's starting with walking. You can play around with that, you know, like with, say, you know, there's people like me who have an extremely slow walking pace. So, left to my own devices, I would never get beyond an amble, really. But if you want to play around with it, you could have, you know, say you're going for a walk, but you're right, okay, I'm gonna power walk for a minute and then I'll have a relaxed walk, or I'm going to, you know, sort of like a power walk up this hill or whatever it is. So you can sort of start stimulating those your fitness to improve, and it's a great place to start if you're looking at getting back into running. I mean, if you're wanting to kind of do sort of like walk run intervals, it's also a great idea when you're starting back to kind of like maybe look at different terrains as sort of lessens the impact. So, you know, you might look at some trail running or some running on a treadmill if you are, you know, using a gym or if you have a treadmill in your house, as well as doing outdoor running, because the impact is definitely part of the reason why you want to go at things slowly, because, you know, your cardio fitness essentially might be absolutely going gangbusters, but your body is just not conditioned for the impact of running. So kind of like doing different things like that can really help in the beginning.
I think if you are, say, looking at wanting to start at a gym or looking at weightlifting, we talk a bit about that kind of thing on this podcast and the benefits of weightlifting for runners and for people in general. I think one of the best investments you can make is to have a session with a personal trainer, or when you join a gym, request some time with a personal trainer so they can write you a program specific for you and based on your own physical needs. Like, there are a million, I guess it's a bit like Learn to Run, there are a million free programs online, and yes, you can go and get one and you can follow it and you might be fine and that'll be great. But there's also a, if it's not something that's been kind of prepared with your personal circumstances in mind and without just a little bit of external support, you know, that little bit extra can make a massive difference in terms of the outcomes you'll achieve. Even just knowing, you know, what kind of weights to start with and what's going to get you the results that you are specifically looking for.
Yeah, and I think too, like whether you are talking to a personal trainer at gym or talking to your running coach or talking to your CrossFit coach or whatever it is, the more information that you can give them, the more helpful they're going to be able to be. So, you know, a lot of people are sometimes concerned about, like, I don't want to tell the coach this because then they're going to tell me not to do this. And just to get out of that second guessing sort of habit. So, you know, like I can tell my coaches, okay, I have one leg longer than the other, right side tends to compensate for the left. You know, these, they know any kind of injuries or issues I've had with running and sort of going through all of that sort of stuff. Then they are then keeping their eye out for that, and they will tell me when right side is taking over, when I need to focus on the left. They'll also, more often than not, if I'm, they will like to get me to do things that are, you know, like work one side at a time, like lunges or split squats or whatever, because I can't compensate for that. So the more you tell people, the more they're going to be able to help you. And sometimes, you know, like people might think, oh, I don't need to ask them about that because it's no big deal. But often it can turn into a big deal. It could be even something really, really simple, like, I am, you know, sort of getting, like maybe getting dizzy on a run, and you just think, oh, I just need to toughen up and deal with it. But it could be a hydration issue, it could be a fueling issue, and you want to sort of like get on top of it sooner rather than later, because you're going to enjoy that so much more if you are feeling energized and, you know, and you're not having your body feel that sort of that weakness or that faintness at any point.
The other thing I'd recommend people do when they're coming back to activity, be it running or weightlifting or anything else, is to, and this is a hard one, try and put aside any preconceived notions of what you're achieving before. And I say that's a hard one because I have no qualms mentioning often that I ran a marathon a couple of years ago, which is a great thing. Yes, proud of it. But when I start running again next year, it's completely irrelevant because in the meantime, all these other things have happened. So I know for me, I'm going to need to be able to put that version of myself aside and be realistic with the version of myself I'm bringing to the table as I'm starting over. Great to know that your body is capable of those things that will maybe help you, you know, stay motivated and keep moving when you're finding it tough. But at the same time, don't compare yourself to where you were at a previous time. Just look yourself in the mirror and say, this is where I am now and this is what I can achieve now, and be really happy with that.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely very easy to kind of, you know, like you have this idea of where you think you should be, and then there's the reality of where you are, and there's often a great chasm of difference between those two things. And in some ways, accepting where you are is the really liberating part, because all of a sudden there are so many less expectations on what you're going to achieve. And I think the thing that I love about running and weights and fitness in general is it doesn't matter, you know, like how long the break is or how far away you are from where you were. It is just a pure, you know, like effort in, you know, like fitness improves. And so it doesn't matter kind of like how far you are away from it. You know that if you just keep putting in the effort week after week, you'll improve. And it's not necessarily like a linear line, like I might like it to be, but it is one of those things where there's a reason why people say you get out what you put in. And it's probably never more true than with things like running or weights or that kind of thing. And, you know, and having sort of going into it and having realistic expectations about it. You know, I'd like to think of it in terms of not so much, okay, this is what I'm doing this week, where am I going to be next week, but really looking at it as, you know, like a training cycle of, you know, of more like 6 to 12 weeks, and having and not really kind of like worrying about it in the middle of that, and then at the end of that, then kind of like maybe looking back at where you started, because that's going to give you sort of the motivation to keep going.
And then I guess the last thing I would say on that is to give yourself some mad props, because you've made the decision to get back out there and prioritize yourself, prioritize your health and happiness again. And that is going to be the greatest gift you can give yourself.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it can get to a point sometimes where people can feel a bit stuck because they have had a break and they don't know where to start. And then, you know, this can also be a level of, oh, if I just kept going, you know, like where would I be by now? But, you know, the best place to start is just where you are, and it's today or, you know, or tomorrow, depending on what time of day it is. But, you know, you can just focus on all of the things that you really enjoy. And, you know, like if you've had a bit of experience with running and you're like, yeah, I get that when I'm in, you know, like training for something specific, this type of workout is necessary, but it's not my favorite thing. You just start with all of the things that you really like. You know, if you don't like long runs, don't do long runs. If you don't like hill sprints, I mean, I don't know who wouldn't like hill sprints, but, you know, don't do them. You know, the best type of run that you can do is the run that you actually do, not the run that you should do. So, you know, you just restrict it to the things that you know that you're going to enjoy and are going to make you feel good, and then start from there, and then that's all you need to do, I think.
Yep, wise words. With that, I'm going to need to pop off in a minute, so I've got to take my child to the dentist. Hooray!
Oh, that sounds like so much fun.
I know, I'd rather be running, actually.
So, yes, we will be back next week to talk about any other questions that come our way. You can let us know in the community group, or you can email us and let us know. And we also are going to be having a bit of a look at sort of every year we tend to focus on having some Operation Move run events, I usually try to pick things that are going to suit people who, you know, who live in different states and that kind of thing. And so I'll be looking at that over the next little while. So if anyone has any suggestions or it has any particular events that they would like me to focus on for those community events, let me know, and I will start putting a list together, just so that, you know, like people can look at them and see if there's some that are close to them or some that look like good running travel destinations, so that they can all start planning for next year.
And I'm excited in our last podcast for this year to talk about our goals for next year, and we would also love to share some of your goals. So do jump in the community group, let us know what you're thinking about. If you are game to have us talk about your plans on the podcast, we would love to do that, because I think the more we put this stuff out there, the more likely we are to do them.
Definitely. I'll start a thread in the community group, and then all you have to do is go in and comment on it.
And we will make you famous on the interwebs.
Definitely. So, yes, everyone have a good week, and we will speak to you next week.
Oh, don't forget to go to iTunes, rate and review. Thank you.
Thank you.